Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisors of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch. Each week, Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property, finance and money management. Welcome back to the couch.
Mate, interesting day today.
We're just gonna
play around with
The sandpit.
We're visualizing today. We're gonna paint a little story. I'm really excited about what we're gonna.
You came to me yesterday. You go, man, I've got this idea. I'm like, all right, let's pause right there. We're gonna hit record. So we're gonna talk about infrastructure today, which is terrific. But before we do, Ben, couple of housekeeping things.
Yes, what have we got?
Facebook Live.
Yes.
Went out this week.
Yes.
So if you haven't checked that out, go and suss that one out. And Ben, just an alert, an Empower Wealth alert, right?
Oh, okay.
Now, for our Property Couch listeners,
yes,
you and I are doing a webinar. It's called The Seven Deadly Sins to Building a Property Portfolio, the undermining habits that's derailing your success and what you can do about them. Now, the reason we're telling our listeners here is because they may be interested, because it's quality content.
Yeah, the content's a river.
But we're going to say it's from the perspective of our business.
Correct.
Not from the couch. So, yep. But if you're interested, we'll have some links in the show notes. We have links on Facebook. Come and check it out. We're doing it next Wednesday, Ben.
And if I'm, can I wear that little company hat for just one more 10 seconds? Yeah. We opened in Sydney this week.
We did.
Where's my
exciting.
Little...
I don't know.
Wait, it's over here. Let me go and grab it.
Yeah.
Because I'm highly organised.
Yeah.
Can you still hear me?
How exciting.
Yeah, it was good.
You were wandering around the other day just in the office, and one of the clients just popped
in. Yeah, a couple of clients were nice enough to call by to check us out. So that's all good. So yes, we're away.
If you're in Sydney and you want to talk to someone, let us know. We'd be happy to chat to you. But today, Ben, my mindset minute.
Yes.
Got a bit of Silence of the Lambs here.
Ooh.
Anthony Hopkins.
Ooh.
You know, Ivis, do you know, is he before your time or is it the father bean?
Yes. Yeah.
So Silence, have you seen Silence of the Lambs, Ivis? No, you didn't have to whisper. No. You could have. No. So Anthony Hopkins, Ben, this is going to lift you. You ready for this?
I'm pumped.
He wrote, "None of us are getting out of here alive." There's more. So please stop treating yourself like an afterthought. Eat the delicious food. Walk in the sunshine. Jump in the ocean. Say the truth that you're carrying in your heart like hidden treasure. Be silly. Be kind. Be weird. There's no time for anything else.
Oh, that's a ripper, isn't it?
How good is that? So I was
nice little motto to live by, or mottos to live by.
Came across my radar, and I thought that's something we want to share to our community.
Thank you, Anthony.
So there's no time for anything else. None of us are getting out of here alive. So do the things you've always wanted to do, which is really, really terrific. So today, Ben, infrastructure. Now, It was interesting. You sent a little note around to the team here.
Yes.
And said, let's play a little pop quiz.
A little pop quiz.
And from that, this podcast was born. So why don't you start from the beginning?
So there's a couple of backstories there. Obviously, Q&A on Monday night was all about immigration and population, which then relates into infrastructure. We also know that basically Infrastructure Australia recently released a paper in terms of future cities. So that's an excellent read for those of you budding researchers who want to get into that.
And urbanists.
Urbanists who, and you know, hopefully we're talking to Infrastructure Australia, and hopefully we might be able to get someone onto the podcast to take a deeper dive into that. So that could be pretty exciting. But the point I'm making here is that a lot of people need to understand the connection between infrastructure and property prices. So the quiz that I sent out to all the staff was, what is the number one thing that I think you need to grow property prices, not only for the short term, but sustainably over a long term? And we got some great responses.
Anything with a wine bar was one of them.
we got all the things from fast speed trains to as long as they had wine bars.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of banter going around the office as well, which is all pretty exciting.
Yeah.
But what we thought we'd do is, and we are completely just gonna, we haven't frameworked this one in any way, shape, or form today. So, but there's a lot of moving parts to this, and so we hope that through this audio, you can paint a picture in your mind in terms of how powerful and how you understand mega cities are built, and then the importance of those mega cities in terms of the long-term price story. So,
from the discussion, that seems like you're a John Wayne fan, because
we were trying to sort of say how do I start off? Well, if you just imagine, you know, if you've watched a Western in your time, right, and you're out in the Wild West, and usually California or Wyoming or wherever it was, where, you know, basically population was moving from the western coast of America to the eastern coast of America. You know, the classic story is they ride into a town, and what's in the town? There's obviously the essentials. Yeah. There's the general store, where you pick up your supplies. The next thing is then the saloon, which is also the accommodation. So some people need a bed. They do need the shelter. So you've got your general store, you've got your saloon. Usually you've got your jail, you know, in terms of what that looks like. And then you've got
the bank, because they tried to rob the bank and they had to go to jail. Yeah.
That's it. So and that is the infrastructure that you need. So I thought, okay, now that everyone can see that picture, how do cities actually get started? So I want to start with some ideas around some of the essentials. Because if you get the essentials right, then we can move to the basics. And then from the basics, we can move to the advanced theory around infrastructure for property. So it's, how do you build a city? So I want to start with the critical things, you know, because this is where I was in the quz, everyone was going to fast speed train. I'm like, no, step it back a bit, come back a bit. So the first thing you actually need is usable land, right? You can't build a city at the top of Nepal or wherever it may be. It's just, it's difficult to build a big city. It's topography wise. So you need usable land. And then you need fresh water. The two essentials. If you've got land and water, you can cultivate the land, harvest that, and so forth. So, you know, city locations historically have started in areas where there's farming, where there's gold, or where there's, you know, port access, where you can trade and bring goods and services in. So, hence, Sydney is a good example. You know, why did they ultimately decide on Sydney Harbour? And they decided on Sydney Harbour because it was a more sheltered port than the Botany Bay that they went into. So Botany Bay has got some of the more heavy industrial stuff and the container port, but Sydney was such a beautiful harbour. So that's obviously one of the reasons why the city started there, and they, you know, built a great, you know, great bridge and all those type of things.
Because it's easy to forget that when these cities were founded a long, long time ago, I mean, we didn't have a Tesla car with a Google map in it. It was, you know, horse and cart, and people had to move stuff from places, and water was a way to get from one place to another.
100%. Mississippi River, one of the biggest examples of moving, you know, huge. Shanghai, the Yangtze River, another classic case of, you can see coal being moved down that river in the, literally, you know, millions of tons a year. So very, very important internal rivers. But, you know, Murray River is an example that, you know, the steamboats would move goods and services up and down. So you need that form of transport. But
because if you think about it, in Australia, you've got the Swan River in Perth, you've got the Torrens River in Adelaide, you've got the Brisbane River, you've got what you talked about in Sydney. Here you've got the Yarra. In Hobart, you've got the Derwent. So it's, you know, they're all based around what you're talking about.
So it's all of those fundamentals. So if we were to extend that a little bit further, we also then need power and sewage. But when you're building a city, normally your sewage and your power will scale up as the need requires it, okay? So you've still got to disperse your sewage, you've still got to do all those types of things from a basic and infrastructure point of view. So you could argue that any city around Australia has the potential to be a mega city. Like, if you think about it, it's like, well, okay, well, I know that maybe Shepparton is an example, or let's go to Coffs Harbour. All of these other ports could have been those mega cities, but ultimately a couple of the cities did become those larger cities, those capital cities, as we call them around Australia. And they're all reasonable sized cities. Some are big country towns like Adelaide, and, you know, on a global scale, but our two mega cities are Melbourne and Sydney. And there's a reason why they're mega cities. And so, you know, the things that we move from the essentials then comes into this idea of the basics. So what is the most important thing? So for me, my question to the staff was around, what do you think it is? And my observation is it's jobs infrastructure. Okay, so when we talked about the Wild West, we talked about, you know, the bank needs staff, the saloon needs bartenders, and people to change the beds, and then, you know, the general store needs those goods to come in and out. But obviously, they need to be constructed, so they need to have builders. Well, the builders need to live locally because they're not going to come from 3 hours by horse cart to basically do an hour's, to do a half day's labour and then go home. So everything needs, and everything starts to push into a location. And then once that motivation continues, it's the jobs infrastructure. So we moved from, you know, basically the the industrial revolution that we had all started to then provide new means where we needed to house our workers. And we started to build high-rise buildings. And we started to move towards mass supply of people in those locations. So if you start thinking about that, you've got the direct workers who are working inside the building, and then all of a sudden you've got this mass population. Now, when you've got this mass population, you need to feed them during the day. They need to go and have lunch. And maybe, you know, they need to have an hour break where they can go and sit in a park and then go, you know, okay, well, I need a coffee shop. And and then, you know, in some cases, well, what about some places where they can buy clothes and do a bit of shopping during the day at lunchtime and those type of things. And so that's what our cities have transformed. And I would have thought through the technology age and through administrative work and what we call white collar work, these cities become unstoppable. In, you know, in this era, where we're going in the next 50 years and 100 years with, you know, transportation through, whether it be Hyperloop or whether it be through drones or, you know, whatever it may, you know, drive self-driving cars, that is all a question. But there's still going to be congestion in these mega cities. So they've still got to solve that problem. So for me, the jobs infrastructure was the number one when I correlate that back to property prices growing longer term. Because effectively, some of these other locations had the opportunity to be the capitals of their states and globally, same sort of principles apply. So that it's that jobs infrastructure that's important to me. And so I call that jobs infrastructure commercial buildings. I call it retail. I call it port infrastructure. I call it logistics infrastructure. So that's how you normally build out your city. So when you look at the main hubs of a big city, you've normally got your knowledge centres in that location.
Yeah, well, I think about that too in terms of the Gold Coast. You know, I moved from Perth to the Gold Coast in 2002, which, you know, was 16 years ago. And at the time, it was really underdeveloped to what it is now. And you could see that prices, there was a little bit of a spike when I first arrived in terms of the property price because there was a whole lifestyle shift. But then it's had sort of 10, 12 years of being quite flat. And that's largely around, you know, we had a business on the Gold Coast, my business partner at the time, and I, and we were down at Varsity Lakes. I don't know if you spend much time down there, Ben, but it used to, you know, Alan Bond subdivided, it used to be called Stevens, became Varsity Lakes, and there was a road that connected up to the Robina Town Centre that wasn't there along Christine Ave. So it's just this sort of old swamp that had slowly started to develop this technology hub, but there wasn't a lot of jobs around. And so people had to get a capital city, try and get a, you know, a six-figure income in the capital city in Brisbane, and the commute was quite long. So fast forward, it's now, you know, that whole Robina area is now a big hub for jobs and technology. The hospital at Robina, the hospital down at John Flynn, the infrastructure of that light rail that was being developed, some of the construction jobs clearly with the Commonwealth Games driving some of that. So you see, as the employment opportunities increase, that means that people can, because everyone wants to live on the Gold Coast, but they don't necessarily have a job.
TIC's a big driver for us, which is a lifestyle driver.
Yeah, human interest, human behaviour, but the economic activity was struggling. And the same with for the listeners who watch my show, we did one where a young couple, they just got married, they were living in a one bedroom in Sydney, hustle and bustle, and they wanted to move up to the Sunshine Coast, which was used to be nicknamed God's Waiting Room, because you'd go up there, you know, get the sun, enjoy, but there's no jobs. Whereas now she went up to move to Amy, which was a big insurer. They built their big head office there. And, you know, there's surrounding that, there's big hospitals, a big medical precinct. So all of a sudden, people can earn an income in the location, and therefore they want to stay there because clearly the weather's amazing and the options for the weekend are terrific. But if they couldn't afford a job to afford a house, they had to go somewhere else. And part of that decision making was around being close to the south end of the Sunshine Coast and being close to the north end of the Gold Coast, so you could commute in. I used to commute from the Gold Coast to Brisbane every day. But now as the jobs start to grow in those locations, we're starting to see that's having a flow-on effect for the property prices.
And you've got to think, you know, if I'm a multinational and I'm coming into a location, I'm saying, okay, we need to set up in Australia. I need to have a look at two things. I need to have a look at what jobs infrastructure is already there, because I'm not necessarily going to build the building. I'm actually going to lease a building. So I'm looking at, you know, whether it's a commercial park, or I'm looking at, you know, like obviously us in Sydney. We went into the CBD, into an existing building, and we've got a small parcel of leasable space, but we hope to grow that.
Mm.
So, you know, but we didn't want to lock into a long-term contract because we plan to grow. So these are all the decisions that people are making. And why am I going into those markets also is because I want to grab that knowledge.
Mm.
Okay, so when you start to build out from an infrastructure point of view, you start to build out your, and Melbourne's a great example of it. We talked about this before about how it was the most wealthy per capita in the world because of the gold component of that. So with that wealth came beautifully designed buildings, and a lot of that wealth was passed into the arts.
Mm.
And so Melbourne is absolutely known as the cultural fashion arts centre of Australia. In addition to that, we also got universities, and the universities were able to continue to develop the intellectual power of the human capital. And so we've now got, you know, Melbourne University and RMIT, Monash, some of the best universities globally, and they're all, you know, specialising in their thing. And so what we're also seeing in terms of when you build out a bigger city, they're not just brilliant at one thing. I mean, Sydney is no doubt our financial capital. So if you look at Sydney, they run CBA, they run Westpac, and they run AMP, they run a lot of insurance companies. So Sydney is absolutely the financial capital. And
yep.
There's that lifestyle piece coming in because I get to live on the harbour and it's a beautiful and the weather's great. So there is absolutely that driver. In Melbourne, we've got, you know, we've got some of the miners, we've got BHP, you know, we've got some of the, we've got a couple of the other big four banks. We've got AMP ANZ and NAB. But we've also got, sort of biotech. And, you know, one of the great things about, you know, Melbourne is we're big in the biotech. We've got a global player in CSL in that sort of space. And they're the type of mass employers. You know, Qantas has got Sydney a bit, but there's obviously good staff here in Melbourne. You've got all these big enterprises that start to bring, and they need talent to grow their business. And everything else flows on for that. Because when you've got, you know, 10,000 people in a building or two buildings or three buildings, then there's got to, as I said, there's got to be the restaurants, there's got to be the services, there's got to be waste collection, there's got to be all of these things, you know, cleaning services, and then the government have to provide the infrastructure and all. So that is what you get in a big city. And, you know, we talk about the essentials. If you don't have the jobs infrastructure, firstly, they don't come.
Mm.
But then it's self-perpetuating. Mm. It's self-fulfilling in those bigger cities because they've reached a critical mass. And if there's a good talent pool there, people will be attracted to that. So coming back to Q&A, the immigration story is most people are immigrating to Melbourne because they're seeing it being quite livable but wonderful quite opportunity livable. In terms of...
number one.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to give the Andrews government the luxury of saying extremely livable because he didn't build the East-West Link.
Yeah.
So I'm still angry with him
about that. And delayed the Westgate Tunnel.
Mm. Yeah, he's doing, you know, some dumb things around infrastructure,
mm.
right? And that's politics and that's political. It's all about Greens votes versus Labor votes. That annoys me that these people put power over people when their job is to serve the people. Another.
Well, when we've been chatting about this, it's easy to forget when you're in a developed world like we are that you can walk into a big city and be intimidated by big buildings and everything, infrastructure it's around, but you can easily get lost in the fact that that's there for people.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you talk about the Wild West, and it's very obvious it's about the people because stuff sprouts around it. But now, 100 years on, it's all developed. It's easy to forget that it's all about the people and what they're doing. So we're just talking about basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Correct.
But ultimately, provide me some shelter, roof, get me close to work so I can provide for my family, have some fun on the weekend. But it's just developed into, you know, cities that have got millions and millions and millions of people. Because I think for people who don't live in Sydney, it's hard to get your head around the fact that they've got alternate CBDs, North Sydney,
yes.
Parramatta,
yes.
And then you've got infrastructure projects like Badgerys Creek Airport, which will drive jobs out there. And in a podcast I was listening to with Lucy Turnbull, she's an urbanist and part of the Sydney group.
Yeah, yeah.
She's talking about there's a big defence company that's taking a big parcel of land out there, so that'll drag some jobs out there as well. So all of a sudden, people can have an opportunity to earn an income without having to come into the Sydney CBD. So I'm a Perth boy, a small town boy. You actually have to wrap your head around the fact that Sydney CBD, as big and as dense as it is, there's more to it. North Sydney, Chatswood, Parramatta.
Yes.
True. So many satellite cities.
And with that maturity comes property values growing significantly. I mean, you know, Sydney wasn't well planned. I don't know who it was, Governor. I don't know whether it was Governor Phillip went back to the Queen to report on the colony and how it was growing. But they had a massive rum trade. Right? There was basically the workers and the convicts, and they loved their bit. They loved their grog, and so things grew really quickly. And houses and humpies and everything was growing all around the Sydney area. And so the roads weren't formed properly. They weren't wide enough. So you go to Sydney, you just notice how tight the roads are.
Mm.
You come to Melbourne, which is a planned city. You go to Canberra, which is the ultimate planned city. It's just roundabouts everywhere,
yeah,
you know, and space and everything like that. So when, you know, that type of stuff happens, and so the planners know what they're doing. It's the politics that gets in the way of the planning. You know, because it's all about controlling power.
Mm.
And so East-West Link wasn't a story of it's not the right infrastructure. The Andrew government said it was the right infrastructure, but then they did their numbers and it was a tight election, and basically the Greens were going to take some of those inner seats. So all of a sudden it's a dumb idea, and $1.3 billion later we're screwed over because of the politics of it. The other thing can also be said around, you know, localised infrastructure in, you know, and urban planning in your local suburbs, because it's not in my backyard that that will take place. So, you know, in bringing it all back, what I'm really focusing in on is the movement of mass people. Because when we get into the basics, right, and I want to talk more about this, is when we ask the question, the number one response we got, Bryce, was public transport or mass transportation.
Mm.
And we all think that's the number one thing we need, but it's the jobs and the jobs infrastructure first, because if you don't build that many people in one location, you don't need the big infrastructure around it. So we're talking public transport, whether it be trains, buses, trams, and we want them, once congestion comes in, we want them to be quick.
Yeah.
We can't afford to have a train that's going to take me 2 hours, because I'm not going to tolerate that before, because I do want to have some work-life balance.
Well, so that's why it comes into part of that affordability discussion, isn't it? There's a group of private enterprises who want to build that fast train. There's even access for it into the Canberra airport already. The provision is ready to be made. But if it's so expensive to live in Melbourne, the way to make things affordable is not to drop the price of everyone else's real estate, is to give people access to lifestyle.
Correct. And
get them back into the capital city job market quickly.
Yes.
Whilst they have the opportunity to have some lifestyle on the weekend.
Yeah, so you know, the basic infrastructure that we need for continued prosperity of a city is definitely public transport.
Mm.
So we're seeing it happening in Sydney and Melbourne with the metros that they're about to build. We obviously need the major arterial roads to connect.
Yep.
Now, poorly designed roads, which are three-lane highways that run into a traffic light, are a disaster. We just need to look at the Eastern Freeway in terms of what they're trying to do. That was, again, I come back to the East-West thing. I keep coming back to that.
I drive on it every day.
Yeah, it's crazy in terms of, but that's, you know, so that's well-planned infrastructure separates that out over time. So come over the West Gate Bridge, you've got multiple exits, and but they still bottleneck because you've got all that mass congestion moving into that location. With that also, you know, businesses need people to buy their goods and services. So we talked about, you know, the Wild West. As those little cities were growing, a second bank opened, and there was a little bit of competition, and then another saloon opened. There might have been a bit of gunfighting.
Yeah, that's right.
One of them might have been burnt down and had to maybe rebuild it again. But the point being, that's how society, that's how, you know, capitalist economies work.
Mm.
People see an opportunity. Oh, there's a new building going there. I want to put a cafe downstairs. I think I can make enough money. Oh, and I can employ people to work in the cafe.
Mm.
And then, okay, well, now I've got to get my waste moved on. Okay, well, I need to hire a waste company to move that. I'm in a building that has property management. Okay, they need to have services. They need to maintain the building in a good, you know, usable order. All of these things come with that. And so even when you go out to some of these other areas where they're building these satellite industrial centres and all of that, they can bring maybe 5,000-10,000 workers there, but nothing like a CBD location can. So CBD locations are ultimately the nirvana when it comes to human capital talent and where you can basically have the infrastructure already ready to go, where you can come and plug and play.
Mm.
And that's really important for businesses that are looking for a growth trajectory and to be able to bring that talent. And that comes back to why the land gets so expensive in that location. And then you do have planning, and again I credit a lot of our planners with good intelligence. They've just got to get through the political crap to basically implement their strategies.
Well, that's an ongoing issue, isn't it? Because you've got four-year terms that are often about getting back in. So I mean,
mm-hmm.
the blank slate of what needs to be done here. It'd be interesting to see. We are super keen to try and get someone on and maybe ask them that question, because how do you navigate? Because clearly everyone goes, well, why didn't someone make a decision 20 years ago? It's because that was five four-year terms.
Yeah.
And 5-4 short-year terms, having people short-sighted.
And there was a questioner in the audience on Q&A on Monday night talking about, you're going to move 65,000 more people out here and we just don't have the infrastructure ready. Like, why don't you build the train lines and the roads out there first and then build the people around them? Now, that's a pretty valid question, isn't it? It's because the economics don't work.
Mm.
And there's two parts to it. The economics don't work and the political environment does. There's no voters out there.
Exactly.
And it's not a marginal seat.
Mm.
So if it's not a marginal seat and there's no voters out there, I'll let the next government worry about that problem. I'm just going to worry about the stuff that, patches the quilt right now, patches the holes in the bucket. So you will never, ever get governments building infrastructure, build it when they will come, unless you're talking about, say, China, where they were bringing 1 billion people out of poverty.
Mm.
And they did say, but some of those cities that they built,
they're empty.
They're still empty.
Ghost towns, yeah.
Because, it was something about it that didn't have all of the boxes ticked. And, the business...
People live there. They didn't have a job. Couldn't pay for the job to get some food.
Classic come back to our fundamentals. Yeah. They built the job infrastructure, didn't they? But ultimately, the businesses chose that there's something wrong about that location, that they chose to grab the talent pool that already exists. And that's why bigger cities always grow. So you can have these satellite cities that you're also... But usually, if there's a choice, the bigger businesses will want to stay in the main central business district for that human capital skill.
Mm.
Now, I would argue on that point, that's why the land values will always maintain, because those cities start to get congested in terms of land, and then they rezone some of that land from residential to industrial, commercial. That's the type of thing we're seeing. So Melbourne's got a bit going on with Docklands and obviously the extension of Bourke Street down into through that Docklands area. They've obviously got St Kilda Road, and they're also now talking about taking it right down into Fisherman's Bend through Port Melbourne there. So they've got a bit of runway in terms of how they can extend their city. Sydney doesn't. Ultimately, it is tight. It's gridlocked. They're going to have to change their planning guidelines to allow for slightly higher density, or as they're trying to do, they're trying to build some of these satellite cities to take the stress off that. But
Lucy Turnbull was talking about how Sydney's biggest challenges is the speed of getting infrastructure off the ground. So she used the example of Barangaroo and her husband, the Prime Minister, they're walking around, and the little laneways and just the amount of buzz and lifestyle and vibrancy that exists there. She was really impressed.
It's wonderful.
But it took them 15 years to get to that. She said, we are not going to be able to double our population by 2056 by taking 15 years to get these infrastructure projects committed and started and finished.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge. That's the outcomes, as you say, because if they find that was an old port, an old port site that then is now into something special, but they've got to be more nimble and quick to move too, because they're getting a lot of people, and they've got more geographical constraints than anyone, haven't they? They've got the harbour, they've got the ocean, they've got the national parks to the south, they've got the mountain range to the west. So that's part of the challenge of Sydney is, mate, that's why it takes you 40 minutes to get three suburbs, because they don't have the same flow that Melbourne, as an example, does have.
And so let's sort of see if we can wrap this up into then the services side. So, what are we providing for the humans that are living in these locations? Well, you go to a big city, how many malls, how many big shopping districts are there in a big city? 4, 5, 6, some of the, Shanghai, 40, seven different underground networks. Mm. So these bigger cities, they can accommodate that, because those businesses can not only survive, but they can thrive just on the number of people that are there. So whether it be the fast food outlets or where the good restaurants or the shopping centres or the tech stores or whatever it may be, the clothing stores, all of those things continue to keep perpetuating that out there. Now, the difference between that and what we see in terms of the stage developments out wide is, and they're getting better, make no mistake, you know, the developers who are building these community areas out in the fringes have a real design around the town square and the town centre. But the reality is if I live within 5 kilometres of Melbourne, I might have 30 Indian restaurants, 50 Thai restaurants to choose from, whereas out in that town square, I'm going to have one. So I better be a good one or I'm going to be disappointed. So I just don't have that choice. I also don't have a choice of 3 or 4 musical nights or comedy shows to go and see or live jazz or those types of things. I just get a plethora of opportunity around lifestyle when I get to those big employment centres. You know, great bars, different things to do because the population's there and you know, movie centres, game venues, you know, arcades, all of that stuff. It's just this interwoven fabric of opportunity that you just can't replicate easily in the outer suburbs.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely agreed. So, you know, the point is that it's all about jobs infrastructure. That's the... But if people think about what our fundamental, I guess, filters we talk about is human interest, human human behaviour, economic activity. So if you contrast, say, a mining town of Western Australia with Canberra, for example, they're interesting, aren't they? Because they're both dominated by one sort of big employer, Canberra having the government and one being mining. But it's interesting that the Canberra real estate prices are pretty high compared to the rest of the country, not so much Sydney, but the rest of the country, because those people are on good incomes. And there's the diversity.
And the reliability is there. And they're going to get paid because the taxes are being collected.
So they're happy to go and get a loan. They're happy to commit to those loans. Whereas the people in the mining town, sure, they've got great economic activity when it's running. But when it's not, even to a subsection of that Perth, it's been flat for some time. Because there is diversity in Perth. You know, there's tourism, there's education. But largely, if you look at the skyline of the Perth CBD, Woodside, there's Rio Tinto, there's all the big miners. They've got the big buildings there. So if they're on the downturn, so too. So it's interesting that if it all comes back down to jobs infrastructure, you've got the eclectic mix, as you've talked about, in Melbourne and Sydney, which means that I can be a knowledge worker, I can be in manufacturing. You can have every lifestyle you want in Melbourne. You can be Kath and Kim, you can be a hipster, you can do whatever you want to do, versus in some of these other regions that do have jobs infrastructure, but they don't necessarily, like you say, a few podcasts. If you go to Tom Price in the northern Western Australia, if they're not paying you $120,000 to drive a truck, you're out of there. Because there's no human interest in human behaviour. Whereas Canberra does. It's quite surprising for people who've never been there. You think it's all about Parliament House and dry politicians.
They're not complaining about infrastructure. They've got great pools, great parks, great
plenty
everything
to do on the weekend. They can drive to Sydney and get access to all those arts and things.
No congestion.
So I think the
message for me here is, because one of the biggest questions that we always get, Bryce, is are property prices going to keep growing, right? Now, we've talked about, how infrastructure plays a role in that, and the jobs infrastructure is the essential thing in building a community and a talent pool. But once you get to a big city, like Melbourne, it's just self-perpetuating. It is not going to stop, all right? There is enough talent here, new talent arriving every day. Businesses want to tap into that talent. So if you're just thinking, you know, okay, I'm Goulburn and all I need to do is build a couple of high-rise buildings and say, all right, I've built the jobs infrastructure, where are you all? It's going to be a different story because the businesses have ultimately got to choose that. But how these mega cities have created themselves has been around this ability to have diversified industry and to be able to attract and specialise. Again, coming back, Melbourne, you know, biotech centre of Australia. So they're looking at things like that. And other cities are starting to catch on to those ideas, and Gold Coast is going to get better at that. Sunshine Coast is going to get better at that. Perth is obviously looking at, you know, what other things can, you know, medical. Adelaide's looking at medical. You know, there's different things in terms of where they can niche and where they can do really, really well. Food and culture in Adelaide. So, you know, they will catch up. But as those cities grow, the bigger cities in terms of number of people and dwelling infrastructure that's needed will ultimately surpass those other cities. So they will grow to 2 times the size before Adelaide gets to 1 times the size, as an example. But you can still, you know, equity harvest great properties in those areas. You can listen to plenty of our podcasts about it doesn't have to be there for everyone, but it's ultimately going to grow property land values closer in, and people are going to come back to that human interest and human behaviour. That's where we start to look at the lifestyle and recreational amenity. It's where we start to look at the social amenity. It's where we start to look at this, the health services infrastructure that we've got, the shopping amenity. All those things start to play in decision-making about where I'm going to live. And that's why when I see all of this amazing, abundant infrastructure closer in, and then I go out and have a look at a new estate, and I see a town square with maybe 20 shops, and hope that they're going to be full and not, you know, for lease for the next 15 or 20 years, I'm missing out on that. And so that's why people feel, and especially the young people, they don't want to miss out on that. So they've got a bit of frustration around the fact that it's expensive to do that. But if they go to these other cities and big cities around the world, it's like, hey guys, you can't do it in New York, you can't do it in Hong Kong, Shanghai, Tokyo. You just got to accept it. And part of the infrastructure that we need to build is coming back to fast trains and, you know, those types of things. High-speed internet is going to mean that people can work a little bit more diversified. But I still think ultimately we are human creatures and we need interaction.
Mm-hmm.
We are collaborative animals. We're not anything different than that. We don't like being alone indefinitely. We're a social creature. So that will always mean that long-term there will be people who make a lot of money and we put pressure on prices in those inner ring areas where that infrastructure and that choice of all of those things we talked about around education, lifestyle, parks, those types of things, is going to win the day.
Well, in terms of trends, Ben, you think about WeWork is a collaboration place where that's an Israeli company that went over to America. It's worth $7 billion now. And Sydney has now got some of that. And that's exactly what you said. People, so that's a mix of the two, where they're finding an employment hub, but bringing lots of people together because people get productive. They have ideas being around other people rather than sitting at home in the home office.
So, and there's other businesses who are trying to catch up to WeWork. It's just, and it is because they want that social interaction. And that really excites me about how, you know, a lot of people are becoming entrepreneurs and they're wanting to start up their own little, because everyone's talking about how technology is going to take jobs. Yep, it's going to take white collar jobs. It's going to take accounts payable, accounts receivable. It's going to take a lot of those types of jobs. So the younger generation are socially aware. I do love the fact that they're socially aware. I love the fact that even some of the big techs like Alphabet, Facebook, those types, they're socially aware.
Mm.
And that gives me great confidence that through generational change that they will give back. They will pay it forward in some respects. You know, they're not all about the big corporate being the biggest company in the world. They've actually got some social elements around them, and I think that's important.
Well, Lucy Turnbull talked about knowledge workers have more of a multiplier effect than blue-collar workers, given that they, you know, they need to buy a laptop, they need to have demand for electricity, the internet, they'll go and buy a latte down at lunch, they've got to wear a nice new shirt. All the multiplier effect of that knowledge center is actually more so than our manufacturing heritage. So,
Look, we'll still need manufacturing, but we've just got to pivot. We've got to pivot to niche manufacturing and specialised manufacturing, because there's still economies of scale. We'll still say we can be great at manufacturing. And you can still, with technology and robotics and all that, you can still be a world leader in a particular niche if you do it properly. So, you know, I'm still a big believer that Australia is the lucky country and we can get on with it. But I'm a big believer in the big Australia.
Yeah.
Like, I do believe we can accommodate more people coming in. I understand that it might look frustrating. I also understand that our aging population has some challenges with change because, you know, back in the day, I didn't have to wait for that. But, you know, on the flip side of that is you're getting mechanical knees and hips and you're getting world's best health to make you live longer. So, you know, there's some real upside for the older generation and certainly for the newer generation. Yep, we understand you've had to pay for your education. You've got a lot of challenges around that. Housing's a little bit more expensive closer in. But, hey, you're going to live another 20 or 30 years longer than everyone else. So just be mindful that you're going to be working. And a lot of people don't separate work from life these days. It's all coming together as one enjoyable experience.
Particularly Gen Y.
Yeah, and particularly Gen Y millennials who are seeing fulfillment in the work that they're doing. And it's, you know, it's like why we get great reward and joy out of what we're doing, because we're hopefully changing people's lives around making a little bit more that they can enjoy, you know, enjoy their retirement.
And to keep in mind the shift, Ben, because baby boomers are likened to a basketball going through a garden hose. The, prior to them, there was not such a big population, whereas X and Y after baby boomers are about the same size.
Yeah.
But baby boomers are starting to move into a different cycle of life en masse now as they're hitting 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
So it's about what X's and Y's want. So, it's, you know, the takeaway from today is about going where the job infrastructure is. But if you're looking outside of those... The obvious ones are Melbourne City, because it's really obvious there. Yeah. Like, for example, in Brisbane, back in the mid-2000s, the Beattie government gave payroll tax concessions to Virgin to park their head office in Brisbane instead of Melbourne City.
We were competing for it down here,
So those are the sorts of things. And so what I say to clients that I talk to, they go, what about Hobart? It's spiked. Well, just be careful about what the job infrastructure story is like in Hobart, because sure, you bring this interstate money and it spikes, and it's been flat, and it's largely driven by affordability. But if you're getting in there, you want to know also what your strategy is, if you're active or you're passive. Because if you're passive, you may get periods where it's flat. Whereas if you're active, you're leveraging out and you're going to the next place. Yep.
So we know that the population in Hobart is aging, right? We know that a lot of people...
And not growing.
No. Well, it's starting to slightly grow. It's very
lifestyles,
Yeah, the life... That's it. And it is lifestyle. So you know the biggest job demand down in Tassie at the moment?
Forestry, tourism, retail?
No, it's actually... home care and nursing home staff. So people, nurses who can, you know, move elderly people, enroll them, you know, all of that sort of stuff. That's where the big opportunity is in some of those areas. And so they're leading the way in some aged care facilities and all of that type of innovation. But they don't pay huge amounts of money. So what we're seeing in Hobart at the moment, and make no mistake, the guys who are getting in there are going to get some lift. But the valuations are going to plateau because... The jobs aren't diverse enough to get lots of managers in there to grow the bigger incomes that are then going to filter out into the other parts. But you will. I mean, you know, the baby boomers, is 5,000 baby boomers a day who are retiring at hitting 65. So they're getting access to super. They will go down there. So there will be, it's like caravans. I said this before, you know, don't buy a caravan now because they're at their absolute peak for the next 10 years. You'll be getting cheap caravans in 10 years' time because there'll be a plethora of them. Everyone says they hold their value. They won't hold their value once that boom generation, that population generation moves past being able to carry a van around.
Absolutely. But as an extension of that, you think about the top 10 population centres outside the main capital cities, like Gold Coast, Geelong, Sunshine Coast, Mackay, you know, all the places where the babies want to go for their lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't drive extra income. They're actually, their income's diminishing. So, but there will still be services around them, health services
and demand for jobs, which then will create which we're talking about.
There we go.
So there you go, folks. There's an insight into what conversations are like with me and Ben. I've got this idea. And so,
typical riff, that one.
Mate, you're a genius. Well done. So there we go. My life hack today, Ivis, is on my 40th. I went to Malaysia with my wife. Where do we go? Can you remember?
Kota Kinabalu?
That's it.
You got I've been there.
Kota Kinabalu is where I said it. Is that right? Ivis said that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's Ivis's...
I just said it in Australian, Kota Kinabalu.
Now, Ben, here's my life hack for the celiacs that are listening. But if you're not a celiac, if you're dairy intolerant, if you've got some intolerance, or for you, health food intolerant. Well, whoever it is. What we did is, it's very difficult for me to go to another country and say, hey, look, I can't eat gluten, right?
Yeah.
So what we did prior is I went onto Google Translate. I said, hello, I cannot eat gluten. Can you please make a recommendation from your menu from what I can eat? And I whack it into Google Translate.
Yes.
And it comes up as Malaysian. And I cut and paste what comes up and I put it on a little card and I take it with me and I put it in my wallet. So every time I walked into the restaurant, they go, hi, can we help you? And I just gave them the little thing and they could read it. I did not have a single problem the whole time I was there because they weren't sitting there going, what's gluten? You know, what do you mean? We'll go and get the chef and the chef. So there's my little travel
Google app, like Translate.
That. So if you have a food allergy of any type, use it and you're about to travel overseas, put it into Google Translate and have that in your kit so that you can make sure, Ben, that you... Because that's a big issue for us when we travel. We've got to make sure that we don't...
Yes, eat. It is.
The wrong types of food. Did you know?
Did you know? So did you know Well, first, before I get into that, shout out, obviously, you know, Stephen Hawking's. He passed away yesterday, so obviously, you know, elite thinker in the areas of science and
physics,
black holes, physics, and theory all of those. Yes, all of that big stuff. So, you know, made a huge contribution to the thought leadership of the globe and, and how the world and the universe operates. So, shout out to you for a job well done. I've got some information for you, Bryce, on population growth.
Good to know.
No, wow. So, hence the reason for infrastructure needs. Population growth is a central driver of this change. So we've got some big change happening in the next 30 years. Population is projected in Sydney to increase by 2.4 million people in the next 30 years, growing the city to 7.4 million. Melbourne is projected to grow by 2.7 million, an additional 300,000 people. And the city is going to be 7.3 million. So Sydney's still the biggest city. Brisbane and Perth will grow on a smaller scale, but will still bring substantial change to those cities. Between now and 2046, Brisbane is projected to grow by 1.6 million people and Perth by 2.2 million people, delivering cities of just under 4 million and 4.3 million respectively.
Yep.
So Perth is still projected to be the third biggest city in the next 30 years based on the report from Infrastructure Australia on future cities.
Mate, I like it. And what it means for people who... Well, it's almost impossible if you're buying investment-grade properties. Actually, impossible is probably too strong a word. But if you just think about that logically, even Adelaide, right, is going to get 500,000 people. It's smaller on the scale. But just... I always liken it to, you know, when you watch a celebrity who's got a YouTube video and they've got millions of viewers. Mm. So everyone's aspiring to millions, which is effectively the symbolism for Sydney and Melbourne with the big numbers.
Yep.
But if you watch someone who's got a YouTube video where they've got someone to watch 5,000 times, in the overall scheme of things, that's actually really significant because a lot of people don't even make 100 views, right? Yeah. So the point of that is Adelaide doesn't have the big number that Melbourne and Sydney has. But the effect of that city is if you throw another 500,000 people in that little space and you're buying in some of the best areas...
You are going to have pressure on scarcity of stock, demand and supply.
If supply is the enemy of growth, demand is the friend of growth.
And if median house prices are 3 or 4 million in Melbourne and Sydney,
that's
a big number,
right?
2 or 3 million in Adelaide when you bought it at sort of 450, 500. It's a pretty good little...
People who haven't been to Adelaide, you got the lifestyle is strong, Ben. And if you're on 130,000 in Sydney and you are commuting 90 minutes and you're in the rat race and you're just not enjoying life, and you can find a job
and
in Adelaide...
And you're servicing a $700,000 mortgage.
Well, if you're lucky, $700,000. Or you can go to Adelaide, take a huge pay cut, but also buy into the real estate market, some of the best real estate, a lot cheaper.
Debt-free.
And you've got a pretty good footy team to go and watch on the weekend. I mean, people are going to make that decision.
They will. There will be people that will check out of the rat race, but there's enough people that want to stay in it. And that's where the balance will come in, and that's why there's going to be amazing buying opportunities always in the property space in Australia.
So based on the number you gave for Brisbane, they've got an oversupply right now. But that'll get absorbed.
It will.
That'll absolutely get absorbed.
You know, 1.6 million people in Perth, that's just nuts between the two of them. It's nuts.
Good, did you know, folks? So there you go, folks. Hope you enjoyed that. That's a day in the mind of Ben Kingsley. We've riffed it today. He was on fire. Probably noticed that he was just going, wasn't he, Ivers? Mate, we love to see that.
I needed to get that out of my system. I just think there's a little bit too much negativity in this little country of ours. And I think if it is to be, it's up to me. And all of our listeners know that. And all the people who sit back and say, oh, it's someone else's job to look after me. Well, wake up.
Wisdom from the silver fox over there. So well done, mate.
Is that my rant as well? I think we need it.
I'm thinking
about a new segment called All Fired Up. Yeah. How do you think about that? Where I just come in and I just tee off on one.
Haven't you been doing that for 162 episodes? So.
There we go.
Well, so Ben, she just talked about All Fired Up. She'll cut that out, but I can say that if she said if you have an All Fired Up segment, she'll actually start talking.
Ooh.
So socials will go up.
There we go.
New segment.
Stig.
Very, very good. There you go, folks.
Infrastructure.
Jobs, infrastructure. If you're looking outside the big capital cities, look for that. And economic activity, human interest, and human behaviour is what drives the people. Until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, Bryce, but only if you act on it.
See you next week.